all full of Chipotle.
Yes, this podcast is brought to you by Chipotle. Our burritos are fucking delicious.
So wouldn't it just be like the most sellout podcast ever to just
play songs
that play at Chipotle? We shouldn't do that, right? Except, I don't know, this song's pretty good.
This song's really good. I'm sure, and the last song before that was really good.
Although I didn't know what that was. Did you recognize it? It kind of sounded like Tom Waits before he blew out his voice, but I don't know if that's who it is.
No, I think it was, I kept thinking it was either Tom Waits or Leonard Cohen. Because Leonard Cohen also does that.
Right.
And not quite as much. I don't know. No, but this Cat Power song that's playing, that it's like my favorite Cat Power song, but I can never remember that it's my favorite until I hear it. I'm like, oh yeah, this is so good. But if someone were just saw me in the street and be like, what's your favorite Cat Power song? I'd be like, yeah, He Wore, you know, or something else.
What's that Chipotle song? And they're just like, oh my God, I'm sorry I asked.
No, I actually even know the name of it. It's Shaken Paper. Shaken Paper.
Yeah, the Chipotle playlist isn't so bad. They played that Elvis Costello song.
I don't wanna go to Chelsea.
Seems appropriate, right? To
yeah,
New York?
Yeah. I was listening to it thinking, this guy is so New York. Like, can you imagine Elvis Costello in any other context?
Actually, he's from England.
But his attitude is New York.
That's true. And before, like, this image everybody has, especially in East Village, your image, he was a big proponent of the nerd chic image, like, way long ago.
Yeah.
Like, the 70s or 80s, whenever he started.
Back when it wasn't cool yet?
Yeah. That's what happened to him when he was on The Simpsons. Somebody stole his hat and his glasses, and he's like, my image!
I like nerd chic. I've got a serious... What's it called for girls? A white on? As opposed
that?
To a hard on?
A white on?
Wide.
Oh, wide on.
Wide on.
Does that really happen? Does your pussy just widen?
No, but I've heard that terminology before.
I've never heard that one. Shouldn't it be like some
like a
derivation of getting wet? Yeah,
yeah.
Like you get slick.
He makes me moist.
Yeah.
I got a big moist pants problem for nerds.
My crocodile mile is ready for sliding.
I need to laugh less on these things.
Well,
I just think you're so funny.
Oh, well, thanks.
Especially because you wear glasses and you're funny. and then we do it.
Tell me a joke and I'll laugh.
It was good,
oh,
wasn't
shit.
It?
That was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
I didn't get it at first, but, you know, and then I did.
It's like, all right, here's a knock-knock joke. You start it.
Knock-knock.
Who's there? Ah!
Oh, you got me.
Hey! So, Chipotle, it's fucking delicious.
Right, so what's the name? Cat Power?
Cat Power, Shaking Paper.
Nice. Here on Chipotle Radio.
Coming to you live from Chipotle St. Mark's.
Thank you.
We saw a celebrity.
As we were walking here, we walked past Natalie Portman walking her dog.
I wasn't sure if you noticed, but as soon as she passed, you'd like squeeze my hand and like hopped up and down. Ah, Natalie Portman!
Well, I wasn't like trying to like stare her down, so I didn't want to make her uncomfortable, so I wasn't gonna go like elbow you and be like, "Hey, look, it's Natalie Portman!" But I figured you were looking too. If yeah. I'm checking out girls, you're checking out girls.
Yeah, and I think that is the thing that I said right after. It's like it must be awkward for celebrities because, you know, it's not like we were in her face or anything. It was just the normal glance, like you would glance at anybody going by, except as soon as I realized it was Natalie Portman, I kind of, you know, like yeah. I didn't break the glance. And it was only a second. But if, like, every fucking third or fourth person you pass is doing that shit, it must be weird.
But at least here in New York, like, people don't swarm a celebrity. You know, people in New York are, like, too cool to go be like, "Hey, yo, it's Natalie Portman!" Right. You know, but, like, if she was
I'm
walking...
I'm not. I met Justin Long the other day. I don't know if you heard about that.
I heard a thing or two. but, like, imagine if she was, like, in Orlando, you know? Or any bumblefuck other place, you know? Right. People would not be as respectful of her space. So what? People look at you a little bit longer. People look at you all the time here in New York.
Yeah.
People grill you. But her dog was not that cute.
I didn't notice the dog.
Yeah, I noticed. She needs a cuter dog. It's like one of those terriers, those like little Yorkshire terriers.
Oh, there's the song we can play. Because I was trying to figure out what song to play that relates to Natalie Portman.
He's been trying for like half an hour now, trying to figure out a song.
Well, like there was this hyper obscure old band called Obsessor that had a song called Natalie Portman is Not a Giraffe. But I don't think I'd even be able to find it.
And that's like really the only relevant line from the song, right?
Well, the whole song is about, is this a giraffe or is it Natalie Portman? But it's like a really bad song. Very bad production value. It's just awful. Then I was saying how Team Sleep, Chino Marino's side project, they had a whole album that got leaked onto the internet early, so they pretty much tossed it and they made a whole new album. And one of those songs was called Natalie Portman, but I've never really heard it and I don't know if it's any good. Then I was trying to think of soundtrack shit, and I was saying there's a, not Prince, Sting. A Sting song at the end of The Professional that is good at the end of The Professional, but I don't know if I really want to play it. And, trying to think of movies, The Beautiful Girls soundtrack is a really good Ween song, but I played it on my first ham radio, so you can go dig that up. What else? Well, then we were saying Garden State, pretty respectable soundtrack.
Yeah, but who hasn't heard that soundtrack?
And I think I've already hit all the heavy hitters off that one. So I was like, I don't know what to play that's based on Natalie Portman, but now that you mentioned her dog, now I can play the Terrier song by the Kids in the Hall. You ever heard that song?
Yeah.
Les Terriers sont mes chiens favoris. It's good. It's all about terriers.
Baby, I love it when you speak French to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I especially love it right now because your breath smells like beer.
Pas un problème, mes tanniers. Give terriers a chance. Yeah. Do the terrier dance. Okay, let's not then. So if you want your love to show, if you want your love to grow, then go Terry, go Terry, go Terry.
Wow.
I was watching a ball load of Kids in the Hall the other day on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's still funny after all these years.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a true episode in probably 6 or 7 years.
Well, I think it's probably better on YouTube because there's a lot of weird nonsense in Kids in the Hall that didn't make any fucking sense. But anyone who's going to bother putting something on YouTube isn't going to pick the skit they don't like. So most of them were pretty good.
Yeah. I grew up on that shit. I mean, probably no more than you did, but like...
Probably far less, man. That's a Canadian staple.
But it was like, when Comedy Central was like a brand new channel, and there was... It really just played like that one Robin Williams HBO special, a whole bunch of Rosie O'Donnell's one-night stand show, and just Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
Like, that was it all the time. And like, I had a lot of time over at my dad's house, so nobody was being a parent, so... I just would sit in front of the TV and watch Kids in the Hall for hours on end.
Nice.
Like 4 to 5 hours a day. But, you know, I guess you grew up with it your whole life.
Yo, man, look at that giraffe!
What the hell are you talking about?
Over there, that fucking giraffe!
That's not a giraffe, it's Natalie Portman, the actress.
Nah, man, look at the neck, it's a giraffe!
Dude, what the fuck? That's no fucking giraffe!
What crook? It's a fucking giraffe.
Shut the fuck up. It's no fucking giraffe.
That's a giraffe.
No, no, no.
Look, man, it's a giraffe.
Not a fucking giraffe.
It's a giraffe.
It's not a giraffe.
Natalie Portman is not a giraffe. She's a petite 5'2" girl. She was a giraffe. She'd have a black tongue. She got a red tongue like you or me. Shut up. Quit smoking the crack. That is not a giraffe. That is an actress. Fuck you. You are an asshole. If she was a giraffe, she would have a big, long, 12-foot neck. She is not. She is an actress. Shut up.
I love him and I love him and I'm gonna name him. It's gonna be a perfect name because he's a perfect dog and I love him. Isn't he great?
No, I don't like him.
What?
Sorry.
What's wrong with him?
He's just not my type of dog. He's just not terrier.
Terriers are my very favorite breed. They're cute. Dogs to feed. They'll help bring you up whenever you are down. Terriers average 20 pounds. When I walk around in this terrier town, one thing that makes me down is when people put bandanas on their dogs. Terriers are my very favorite breed. Dogs to feed. Terriers were there in the 11th century. Napoleon had one to prevent misery. Terriers are good with the aged. Studies show that they prolong old people's lives. No one wants to die like this guy died. Die, 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 die. Worms eating your eyes. Bass solo.
Excuse me, ladies. You're scantily clad and have nothing to do with the narrative. Therefore, it's sexist. Sorry. Wow, that hurt. You know those mornings that you just can't get out of bed and you'd call in sick if you had a job? You know those mornings where you just want to watch TV, eat corn chips, and masturbate? Sure you do. But when those days happen, what you should do is start thinking about my friends, my little furry waterproof pals. You know what I'm talking about.
Le Perrier, so me tape tes barils. Johnny Chamon, pour problème et maintenir. Don Juan in Itablo. Le Perrier, so après. Give terriers a chance.
Yeah!
Do the terrier dance. No, that's not. But if you want your love to show, if you want your love to grow, then go Terry, go Terry, go Terry.
See, your dog just isn't good enough.
I guess you're right. Go on, Smaxy, to a brand new life.
Oh shit, there's something else I can play. Did you ever see Brain Candy?
Of course.
Right. It even in Canada, didn't do well. And it didn't make its money back, sad to say. But I love that fucking movie. I love it. So let's play, do you remember the band that started off like this dark metal band kind of based on Danzig? And then once they ate the
brain.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Gleamanex.
Gleamanex, yeah.
Then they became a happy, sunshiny band. But their song, when they were evil, was awesome. Some days it's dark. Some days I work. I work alone. I walk alone. It's called Some Days It's Dark.
You know, why don't we just have you sing these songs? Fuck Kids in the Hall.
And the band that performed all that shit was, it was Bruce McCullough was the singer, but...
of course he was.
But the band is this Canadian band called The Odds. That I played one of their songs before, Eat My Brain, which is a super good song. And their other big song was called Heterosexual Man. And the kids in the hall were in the video as like an improv troupe. So Let's play Heterosexual Man, too.
All right.
It's purely about wanting to bang girls.
Well, this, okay, that kind of does bring up a point, though, not heterosexuality, but just canon in general. Was that mainstream for
Canada?
Yeah,
that was a fairly big hit, yeah.
Like, even though it was so odd and weird and kind of subversive a lot of times, that was still just, like, standard?
Yeah, I think the odds were not out of the ordinary.
I mean the show.
Oh, you were talking about Kids in the Hall. Yeah. I thought that Heterosexual Man was a semi-hit song.
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, sure. But yeah, that was not so, Kids in the Hall was like, yeah, it was very mainstream. My parents watched it, we watched it, like everybody from all age groups watched it.
So Canada just has a better developed sense of humor than America.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that's necessary. Well, a part of it, too, is just that it's not as bad as in England. They have the BBC. BBC One, BBC Two, you know, everything's fucking BBC. But
BBC One is a good one. BBC Two is trashy.
Right. But it's just so silly that it's all so socialized that everything is a fucking BBC channel. Like, there's like five of them.
Yeah.
But, but we had the CBC, and Kids in the Hall was on the CBC, and there's just only so many shows on CBC, you know? So that's what you watch, you know?
And the Canadian, I guess it's the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company.
Corporation.
You know, I'm like really into animation. And if you look into animation and you like dig up all these shorts, something like 75% of them were funded by CBC or like Toronto University or whatever the school is that's in Toronto. But a lot from Canada, a lot of Canadian funding goes into animation. Yeah. Animation that I dig, at least.
What was it? We were just watching something the other day that was, oh, Ginger Snaps. And, yeah, it's been a while since I've seen something Canadian, but, yeah, the end credits are just more than fucking, you know, made possible due to grants from the Canadian Film Board and, like, just fucking maple leaves fucking everywhere.
Yeah, the Canadian Film Board. That's another thing I see a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, you fucking do anything and they'll give you money, it seems like. Just.
So why don't you do that? I'm sure you could get somebody to get you some grant money.
Maybe.
Shit, I'll write your grant writing. I used to do grant writing.
Yeah.
You come up with an idea, I'll get you money for it. But maybe not, because I'm not really... I don't know how Canada works.
Yeah, I don't either. But yeah, I mean, there's no question that... And I mean, I've seen some horrible shit, though, come out of Canada. Like, just god-awful. That should never exist, except that, you know, Canada pushes a lot of money towards the arts because it wants to be recognized. And yet, ironically, what is it that makes us recognize? Trailer Park Boys. Biggest grossing Canadian movie of all time was the Trailer Park Boys movie. And it only made, like, $6 million.
Well, frankly, that was because America was surprised that you had a trailer park culture at all.
Yeah, do we ever. Wow. But, on the other hand, this one movie that was being just shoved down everyone's throats, it was so fucking shitty. It was called Bon Cop, Bad Cop. And it was officially bilingual, like everyone.
Oh my god!
Yeah, like it was just depending on which market, French or English market, they subtitled the alternate half of the movie. And it's about this murder that happens right on the dividing line between Ontario and Quebec. So the stodgy English-speaking cop, Anglophone cop, has to deal with a fly-by-night, devil-may-care, you know, Quebec cop.
Is that the attitude, or is that the stereotypes that the Frenchmen are all like, crazy and...
No, not at all.
No? Okay.
No. The French are just flat-out assholes. There's nothing charming or roguish about them. But, and then it turned out that the killer was like a hockey killer, and he was killing people that were taking Canadian hockey players and, you know, signing them to American teams. It couldn't have been worse. It was just the shittiest fucking movie I ever saw in my life.
That you could not make a more Canadian movie, though, if, like,
right,
I don't know, you shoved a polar bear's ass full of maple leaves.
Exactly, but even in that case, Canada as a whole was like, listen, Bon Cop, Bad Cop, you can go fuck yourself, you know? We'll go see Trailer Park Boys, but we're not going to this. The only reason I went is because I worked at the theater. I still wasn't going to go because I had to get a pass to go to our sister theater because we weren't playing that horse shit because we played blockbusters and important movies. Well, important, as in they're going to make money.
Yeah.
We didn't do favors to fucking people at our theater. But was this chick who worked at the theater was like, oh, come on, will you please come with me? It's free. We don't have to pay for this shit. And I was like, fine. And it was the worst. Like, I would have walked out, except she was into it because she was stupid. So.
I have a new song. I wrote it in the park.
Happiness and sunbeams and cute little puppy dogs. These are the things that I've seen with my heart. Life is a happy game if you don't forget to smile. But every now and then,
fuck,
your face,
something's wrong.
It harbors a frown. Sadness is a barnacle clinging to your bright boat. You won't let it sink your spirits if you'll only learn to float. We are all sea captains sailing on life's rough seas. Come on, you Magellans, come with me. I've got pie, happiness pie. Happy tailors, happy workers, happy farmers, happy girls, happy widowers, happy freelance artists, happy welders, happy world, happy drinkers, happy thinkers, happy musicians, happy beauticians, happy mares, happy pears, happy call those happy hula boys. Happiness pie.
I wanna make every woman I see.
Canadian song then, because of this Canadian talk. It's a band called, how am I forgetting? This is only one beer. How can I be this beered up?
Sweetie, you're what we call a two-beer queer.
Two-beer, yeah. I've played them before. They have a song called Cigarette Dangles, and I'm an adult now. I play both those songs. Shit, The Pursuit of Happiness. T-P-O-H, that's them. So I'm going to play The Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, that's the name of their band?
Yeah. Mo Berg, his name is. He's pretty famous. Everyone knows him in Canada. He's
long, Canada famous.
Straight blonde hair. Yeah, Canada famous, exactly. You've probably heard I'm an adult now. I think that hit in the States a little bit. I'm an adult now. I got the problems of an adult on my head, my libido. Maybe you haven't. It's old, too. It's from the 80s. Anyway, they have an album called The Downward Road, and the very last song is called Terrified, and it's about this dude who's going out with this girl who basically treats him like shit and has no respect for him, but she fucks him crazy good. And the song's just about how he's like, I should break up with this chick, but man, she slithers over and fucks the shit out of me and then leaves me laying on the bed while she goes to work. And then he just goes down to the bar on the corner and drinks and feels bad about himself, but he can't break up with her.
How badly could a woman treat a man, really, in a relationship that would make... I don't know. That sounds like kind of an ideal situation for a lot of guys. She comes over, she fucks you, she leaves.
Well, therein lies the existential angst, is that somewhere deep down, you know you should be a bigger person than this. You should be more of a man than this, but you just can't bring yourself to end this situation. So that's the song. It's called Terrified. I like it a lot.
While Keith is in the bathroom, I'm just going to talk to you guys for a little while, too. So I have this band that I really like. Since he's talking about regional shit, it makes me think about my regional shit. And there's this band called Mountain Goats. That they're I always associate them with back home with Florida. I don't know if they're actually from Florida or not, but one of their albums is called Tallahassee. And it's called Tallahassee because Tallahassee is kind of, it's kind of country. It's kind of a university town. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's got a strange feeling about it. And the lead singer said that it was just like the perfect mix of southern hospitality and weird, freaky isolation. And he wanted to capture that on an album. And the album itself is like a study of dysfunctional relationships. You know, it's the kind of dysfunctional relationship where like you love how much you hate each other, you know. And I know Keith refers to our relationship as two fucked up people just trying to make it work, and you know, that's kind of the attitude of these songs on Tallahassee, Mountain Goats Tallahassee. It's two fucked up people that are relishing in their fucked upness, but overall it's positive. Overall, there's love through all the awfulness that's going on in these songs, and they're really upbeat. You know, doesn't everybody love an upbeat song about a failing, crash and burning relationship? So the song I'm going to play is Alpha Rat's Nest, which is definitely one of the more upbeat ones. Though it's not a storyteller one. Maybe story... Nah, whatever. Alpha Rat's Nest. Because just because a relationship is fucked up doesn't mean that it's not valid. You know, sometimes you learn the most about yourself through the most fucked up relationships. Because if you're just okay and nice with each other, you never feel out the boundaries of your personality. You never feel out where your sore spots are if nobody ever takes the wrong step, you know? You kind of need someone to tear you down every once in a while so you can know where you need to be built up, right? Or maybe that's just me justifying being in fucked up relationships. But even Keith and I, we go at each other really hard, and we don't hold back, and that's just kind of a symptom of like what intense and weird and passionate people we are. You know, you can't like have the good without the bad, I guess. Like you can't be someone that loves intensely without being someone that destroys. Oh, hey, baby, you're back.
It's taken forever for that bathroom to open up. Did I interrupt?
No. I was just about to put on the song anyway. So,
nice.
So that's between me and you, listener. Alpha Rat's Nest, Tallahassee.
All the lengthening hours in the refinery, belching fire into the sky, we do our best vampire routines as we suck the dying hours dry. The night is lovely as a rose. If I see sunlight hit you, I am sure that we'll both decompose. Ah, the fitful sleep and the fire engines that I dream of when I dream. Someday we'll both wake up for good. I will try hard not to scream. The evening wind will shake the blind. You're stirring from your slumber. We've got something hateful on our minds. Oh, sing, sing, sing for the dying of the day. Sing for the flames that will rip through here and the smoke that will carry us away. Yeah, sing for the damage we've done and the worst things that we'll do. Open your mouth up and sing for me now, and I will sing for you.
So I was just in Starbucks to take a piss. Real long line. One other guy in the line. All ladies. And sometimes that lack of a wang, it's a shame when it comes to bathrooms.
We have a lot more clothes to take off. You just get to open your zipper and pull your dick out. You know, yeah. We have to take down our pants and then our tights and then our panties.
Go on.
And then hover tentatively over the bowl and then pee.
While hot, delicious urine splashes out.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Sometimes onto your leg.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, so you guys definitely, I mean, you know, once in a while as a dude, it's like, oh, I gotta wait longer. But you guys have it so much worse. You have to touch those toilets. We don't have to come anywhere near them.
Sit on that shit.
Well, you gotta hover.
The bathroom in Chipotle had, like, puke and pee all over it.
Gross.
Yeah. But, I mean, we are right around NYU. Bulimics have to feed themselves, too, you know?
Yeah. Everyone loves the delicious taste of Chipotle.
It tastes the same coming back up as it did going down.
All right, train break, train coming by. That's definitely unfortunate. I sort of fell into the track due to my gentle nudging and just got run over. And now she's just been pulverized into a tomato paste-like smear on the side of the train thing. That's fucking disgusting.
Tomatoes.
Oh, there you are. You're okay.
It's a miracle. It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, it's 2 days after Christmas, for the record, for everyone listening, in case they care. So I was like, what song could I play? Standing in line to piss. It's like, what song should I play? I thought maybe I would try to throw to a song real fast while I'm in the bathroom, but I didn't want to fuck around too long because there's a lot of people waiting to piss. And all I could think of was NoFX, Longest Line, because it's a long line. And the line got longer, if anything, just tons of people behind me. But I was like, nah, whatever. But then we were just in Kmart, and we were in
the slowest line. Three people, but it was like they were stoned. They were just the slowest fucking people. And it's like, oh, I forgot my stuff. Oh, is this a train? Fucking hell, it's not even a train for us.
Train break. Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, just like Wayne's World. Car. But yeah, no, I guess that probably is just that at Kmart, yeah, I mean, you don't get paid more to work productive, so you must just get into a slug-like sloth of just working so slow. Because, yeah, when you said that, that is what it was like. It's like they're all just stoned, just like stumbling around.
They're working by the hour. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
So after the second long line, I was like, fuck it, I'm going to play that song. And this is it's kind of an old NoFX song, but this is when punk music started turning really faggy, but before it solidified into emo. And once it was emo.
Pop punk was before it became emo.
Right, but see, that's the thing.
In the era of pop punk?
No, before, but. See, it's like emo was solidified enough that it's like, okay, I understand this phenomenon. I'm all right with it. This is not my thing, but, you know, whatever. But there was this awkward transition period where things were going that way, where it still seemed kind of like punk, and it still seemed, like, kind of like the music I respected, but I was like, why is this turning so pussy? What the fuck is happening here? And I remember during that time, when it was just confusing, I would think back to songs like this, where, like, NoFX had some catchy fucking songs. This is one of them. This song is catchy as hell. This is a pop-punk song. But not in this horrible way that just makes you want to kill yourself. There's our train. So the point is, this is a catchy pop-punk song before things became pop-punk.
Before pop-punk was your friend riding around in her turquoise Oldsmobile?
Yes. Let's take it away.
In the darkest tunnels, night, you see a just a headlight. You look like the one that's heading right for me. It would be nice if things could turn out right. Turn out right, yeah. Don't think I'll ever see the day.
Poster in the subway for free abortion alternatives. Do you think is that one of these like secretly Christian places?
Not even secretly. It's an abortion alternative.
Right.
And they're offering you free pregnancy tests and free ultrasounds so that you can, if you're feeling like not so sure and you're like, alternative, they're like, the alternative is you keep your baby and not go to hell. You fucking whore.
Se habla español. So this girl in this poster looks to me like so close. Like she looks like Davey Havok from AFI. And I was just saying how Davey Havok is a very effeminate, pretty man.
And not even like she's his sister. Like it's him with the wig on, right?
No, his hair is just like that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he looks exactly... That could be him. That could be him in this ad. Which would be a weird joke. Yeah, everything. The hands, everything, right?
What if it turns out it's just like some weird... way underground, way viral ad campaign for their next album.
Yeah, it's called FAA, Free Abortion Alternatives. They just put out here's the little history of AFI. They used to be this hardcore punk band that wasn't that good. Then they turned into like a horror punk band, like the Misfit style, that was excellent. Like that was my favorite era. They had such good shit, so awesome. And I don't know what I should play.
I've never heard, I don't even know what horror punk would be like.
Do you ever hear the Misfits? Do you know that at all?
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you what one of their songs are.
Sort of Danzig-y, like a little bit slower than they basically slowed down and became a little more dirge-like and more backgrounds, more whoa, shit like that. And they were so good. And then they put out this fucking god-awful album that just sucked 100,000 nuts.
That must be the album that I'm familiar with then, because I'm like, AFI.
Maybe and maybe not, because it was like, they really went in just like an alternative rock direction. I can't remember what the album was called, but it was just so boring, so plain, and just so fucking crap, and it sold a lot of copies. But then their new one, maybe December Underground, do you know that one?
All I know is I saw a single on MTV once, and I was like, not really so great.
Well, their new one, December Underground, this is further alienating their old fans, because they've gone full on new wave, but it's actually pretty good. Because like me and Matt, my friend Matt, we both just wrote off AFI after that. I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, it was awful. The awful one that everyone loved. And then this one, you could go two ways. Either it's like, this is beyond awful. This is like awful beyond all description. Or, but me and him, we like new wave shit. We like The Cure. We like fucking sort of cheeseball poppy, somewhat electronic-y. You know, like it's... I can't say it was a great album, but I liked it a lot better. I'm all right with the way they've gone. But then they just put out a side project that's like all electronic music, and nobody gave a fuck. And I only listened to it once, and I didn't like it.
So So, what to play?
Yeah, so AFI has gone through a lot of iterations in their day. Well, let's just go with the classic. They got this song called Total Immortal. It's the very first song I ever heard by them. Me and Matt both saw it on... There's a punk show on Much Music called The Punk Show. Or there used to be. And it's all black and white, and it's full of fucking jack-o'-lanterns and stuff. And he just wanted to be a little Danzig back then. Because he's a little short dude, a little short Italian guy. Looks like a girl from an abortion ad.
An abortion alternative ad.
Right. And, yeah, Total Immortal is just a really good song. But even this, fucking The Offspring did a shit cover of it. Just fucking crappy. That was on some soundtrack. And they did it because they liked the original song. But their version just was just rotten. But a lot more people knew it back then when no one knew AFI. And I was like, man, that's just not right. Like, I guess it's nice to spread the word of AFI, but what the fuck? Which seems weird to say now that everybody knows fucking AFI and they sold a zillion billion copies. Anyway, it stands for A Fire Inside. Yeah.
Just like your baby inside.
Yeah.
It's a life. Don't snuff it out like your fire.
Right.
We should call the number.
I thought you were going to get an abortion.
But they won't let me eat it.
Just suck at its little brain with a straw right into your mouth.
Chomp, chomp, chomp. I don't know. Would you eat a fetus if it was like your fetus?
No.
No?
Don't they do that shit in the South? Isn't that
No, it's placentas.
Right. What's the difference? It's still...
Well, placenta isn't part of the baby. It's just the part of your body that feeds the baby.
Right.
So, it's like if you cut out part of your liver, or if your body just expelled part of your liver, and you were like, well, it is liver, and then you ate it. That's kind of the idea. Also, it's supposed to, like, you know, it's really nutrient rich, and it's, you know, if you are poor, white, southern people with, or anybody, any race doesn't necessarily matter. If you're poor southern people without access to a hospital, and you're probably birthing at home, you know,
well,
you gotta
eat
that.
Well, how much is there?
It's a couple pounds.
Still, you don't have to eat that. That's still a cultural decision.
It's
not
based
on any necessity. No one's that poor in North America. No one. That you can't go to the fucking food bank and get a can of peas.
There probably was a time that it made sense, you know?
I just remember Patrice was making fun of it because she was like, you know, you guys can make fun of fucking chitlins and pig knuckles all you want. At least we ain't eating motherfucking placenta. What's wrong with you, white folk? Can't really argue with that.
How often do you get to eat human flesh? Let's just say that. How often do you get to eat, like, a human organ? Not that often. I wish this guy would shut the fuck up.
Yeah, he's ruining our show. It's just one of the dudes trying to sell candy for a sports team or whatever.
Yeah, and how humiliating is it for the, like, because I remember as a kid, like, I had to go door to door and sell candy for my school. And that's awful. And if you think about it, you're like, here, kid, go knock on strangers' doors with candy and try to get them to buy it. Hopefully you don't knock on anybody, any predator or, you
know. Yeah, for us, it was always, like, magazine subscriptions.
Really?
For our school, yeah. Sell a magazine subscription and we get a percentage. I don't know, I heard somebody saying that this candy bar thing, it's some kind of scam, but how bad of a scam is it? But how bad of a scam is it if you get a chocolate bar?
Yeah, and it's not like a scam. It might not be for their school, whatever.
Right.
I mean, if I really wanted a candy bar, I think it'd be pretty awesome. I remember we sold candy in our schools, like in high school, I didn't go door to door, but you just would sell candy for your club or whatever, and it would be great because it'd be good candy. It'd be like 100 grams, M&Ms, and Hershey bars or whatever. I love 100 grams. And I, of course, had this group of friends that were total fucking stoners. So I'd go, like, after fourth period, after I know they just cheaped, and I'd be like, hey, you guys, I'm selling candy. And they'd be like, awesome. They're like, give me M&Ms. And then I'd be like, hey, you forgot to pay me. Like, and I'd get them to pay me twice, you know, or like,
wow.
Just taking advantage of stoners.
Like Memento.
Yeah. Why don't you spit in this beer? Here, have a free beer. But, you know, at least, I don't know, here in New York, like, selling in the middle of the subway train station, it's just humiliating. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially the same as the crackhead dudes.
Yeah.
I just had a good moment of your time. I am not here to harass anyone. It's not so different.
If you could just listen, my plight is not no so different than from many others. I am a hungry person. Yeah. Poor dude. We'll be right back.
were just sitting around, and I was taking Ian on a visual tour of the history of AFI, about how in Miss Murder he looked just like a chick, and in Total Immortal he looked all tough. And this is third season, which is even older than Total Immortal, and it's such a good song. So we'll listen to that. Time warping going on in this podcast. It's now the next morning, Sunday morning. Cause you came in with the breeze on Sunday morning. Yesterday I watched this Billy Corgan documentary called If All Goes Wrong, where it's 2007, right as Zeitgeist was coming out. The Smashing Pumpkins took up residency at like the Fillmore in San Francisco and played a bunch of songs. Played a bunch of shows, like a week's worth or so, in loud-ass trains, and he tried to write a bunch of new songs, like a song a day type of shit, as he was going along, and it was kind of aimless, formless, sort of documentary about nothing in particular, not particularly insightful, no real poignant moments. I guess, I mean, it's a standard rock thing, but he was saying that it is cool to be in a band like the Smashing Pumpkins, who's had a lot of commercial ups and downs and stuff. Although I thought this was interesting, that Machina, the album that really demoralized him because it didn't sell enough copies, sold like 500,000. From what I've heard, that's the same amount of copies that Zeitgeist sold. And Zeitgeist was considered quite a successful comeback. But part of that could just be that we're in a different world now. We're in a world where nobody buys CDs. Lord knows I don't. So I guess the fact that 500,000 people actually bought Zeitgeist is pretty fucking cool. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, that even if it's just like a whatever show, like the crappiest show you yourself ever did as a band, like the Pumpkins' crappiest show where nobody was feeling it and the equipment wasn't working and you just have a bad feeling about the night, you know, maybe there's still that one guy that you'll meet years later who was at the back of the room during that show and being at that show and hearing his favorite song, you know, made him not jump off a fucking roof or something. So yeah, you just gotta take it for granted. You just gotta assume you're having a positive effect and that what you're doing means something. But it was kind of a, you know, I mean, it's a fucking Smashing Pumpkins documentary. Of course it was a little bit downbeat.
not super energetic. And he was writing a lot of acoustic-y songs. And it just definitely seems like Billy Corgan is probably not a fun boss to have. He's definitely somewhat on the dour side. So, my first quick listen through of the songs he wrote during this residency period, the one that he released was the Rose March. People, even in the documentary, kind of point toward it as like, okay, here's the one. Finally, I hit one that I liked that turned out good. And it got released on the American Gothic CD. But there's this other one called I'm Doing the Best I Can that I like. Apparently it's about his personal assistant. Who was kind of like, you know, getting a little fed up with old man Corgan. And I was like, all right, come on. I'm doing the fucking best I can. So that's why there's like references in this to like, have you seen my other sock and shit, you know? Old man Billy just being a little demanding. But yeah, this is a nice little ditty. So let's listen to that. I'm on my way to get some eggs. Eggs and bread and such. So we'll listen to this little tune while I shop.
I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. So please stop. I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. So please stop me now. There's no way around. Please just understand me now. There's one way to the ground. Please just understand. I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. So please stop. I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. So fuck off. Oh yeah, la la la. My head is falling now. I wanna pick your lock. Have you seen I'm doing the best I can. The key with my other side. I'm doing the best I can. So fuck off. Thank you.
got all my fancy pants shit. I had to go to like the fancy organic place in this neighborhood just because I didn't have to, but it's the only store I like in this neighborhood. Everything costs a lot of money. Like, their cheap jam is $4 for a tiny little jar. Their expensive jam is $5. But I like that there's one person in this neighborhood that's actually trying to keep their place in order. Fucking hell. Great. Anyway, the other little ditty I just played, I can't even hear myself. I swear to God, I cannot hear myself talking right now. I can hear vague sounds coming from my fucking mouth. Jesus Christ, like I can feel vibrations. Ugh, goddamn fucking trains, I hate them. Alright, so, yeah, the other little ditty I played, that was a Smashing Pumpkins song called The End is the Beginning is the End that was from the Batman and Robin soundtrack. I played it way back on the First Time Radio. And it's become more known lately because it was the song, they used the quiet remix of it for the first Watchmen trailer. So it kind of got a new lease on life. Which makes sense, because Batman's a Warner Brothers franchise, so they probably just had that song kicking around in the vaults, and we're like, that's cool, let's use it. And it was really good in that trailer. So that's just a little instrumental cover version that some dude did. It's this site called thepumpkins.net, where I've been getting a ton of Smashing Pumpkins stuff lately. It's a really good site. And before I babble on about Smashing Pumpkins a little more, sad news, Mother, that band I've been playing lately, just have a new album that just came out. One of their vocalists left the band, the one who's like a really good singer, the one who belts it out, the one who sings Love and Truth on their first album. I played that on one of the old shows somewhere. So that's a shame, probably not a good sign. I mean, they say it's amicable, but, you know, strange, album just came out. Right in the midst of touring, chick left, probably not a good sign. But maybe she'll do like a solo thing now. That would be cool. Alright, so I've been downloading a whole ton of Smashing Pumpkin shit, and I found this thing from last year where they were on XM satellite radio doing little acoustic-y versions of songs from Zeitgeist. And what's cool about it is it was just Billy Corgan and Jimmy Chamberlin, the drummer, who basically recorded that whole album by themselves, then they hired on the new band afterward for touring. And they were kind of going through the evolution of some of these songs, like, this song started off with this, and then we changed this little thing. And it's really kind of interesting, so I'm just going to chop that up and play just the parts where they talk about the evolution of the song, and then I'll play a little bit of the song, just enough to, you know, get a taste of how it the full one sounded. But my favorite song that they play during this performance, it's called Bleeding the Orchid. And it's one of my favorite songs on Zeitgeist. It's about, like, basically just the alternative 90s music scene, just stripping it bare for everything that it's worth. He said specifically, this song is a little bit musically influenced by Alice in Chains, who he's kind of, in retrospect, gone back and realized we're a really good band. And Alice in Chains are a good example of just, like, a band being sucked dry. I think they have more greatest hits albums than they have real albums at this point. So, unfortunately, that song, he doesn't take you down a little evolutionary lane. But it's a really good song, so I'm going to play that too. So let's all kick back and soak in some Smashing Motherfucking Pumpkins.
Jimmy and I started working in Scottsdale, Arizona in November of 2005. That's how long it's taken just to get... I mean, today the album is out, the day we're recording this. And when we first started working together again, you know, it was sort of that thing of like, okay, well, what kind of Smashing Pumpkins album are we going to make? Because we were certainly conscious of the kind of album people would want us to make. Because in the years that we weren't together, people constantly said, oh, come back, make a rock album. You know, you get that sort of rah-rah kind of thing from people on the street. And so we knew if we didn't make a rock album, there'd certainly be a lot of resistance to some art experiment or something. So it was sort of like a lot of discussions about, well, what does that even mean? I mean, because there were so many different versions of the band's rock. Like, people liked Siamese Dream Rock a lot, Melancholy a lot. A lot of people don't know the Gish style of the band, and certainly a lot of people didn't like the Machinist style of the band's rock. They found it too negative or whatever. So just being loud is not necessarily. So we were like, okay, well, what does that even mean? And what does that even mean to us? Like, how do we even want to play? And at that point, it was just only the two of us working. So this song we just played, That's the Way is a perfect example, because I had the original, I can play a little, the original feel of it was something like,
they say that life ain't easy, they say your life's a crime, destroy up all good reason, how I'm alive.
Something like that. Can you play that original beat?
Yeah, the original drum part was...
Let's do it together. 1, 2, 3, 4.
They say that life ain't easy, they'll say your life's a crime, destroy up all good reason, oh, I'm alive.
Something like that. So...
crazy, right?
But right away, like, we love the idea of the song, but right away we said, well, that just sounds too much like... that reminds us too much of melancholy. So right there you have a contradiction of thought. On one level, we know that people want to hear that kind of feeling from us because that's what they identify as some of our best work. And on the other hand, we're saying, well, we don't want to sound like that. So what do? You know what I mean? It's not as simple as saying, well, reject the idea because it's familiar. One thing we've learned from working with the producer we work with a lot, Flood, was that every idea is adaptable. And it's ironic because we just ran into the Killers, who did their last album with Flood, and we said, how was it working with Flood? And they said, we got sick of doing every song 6 different ways, you know. And we had to laugh because that's the way he works, you know. He gets you out of your comfort zone. So we kept messing around with a song, and we kept playing it like this. We probably played it like that for 2, 3, 4 weeks. And every time we'd play, it's a great song, but it's really bothersome that it's that same feel every time. And I don't know, but it's one of those things where you stand around one day and all of a sudden I just started playing. Because we started talking about, like, different rhythmic feels. And so there was... and as soon as you started playing that, then it was just like, it was all there. So it was as simple as just one different idea took us from 1995 to 2005 at that point. And so that's the kind of journey that we went on. It was trying to find who we were today, but always from the wellspring of who we were, so that we weren't sort of just rejecting the past and saying, well, we don't want to do that, because we'd already done that. The Adore and Machine albums are sort of, in a way, rejection of what had become before. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to sort of put our arms back around what we used to do and find what we liked about it and get rid of the rest. Because, you know, the world has so many different impressions of what it's supposed to be. And when we were younger, you know, our basic stance was always F you, you know? It was like, you don't like what we did, F you. You know, even if we're wrong, F you. You know, seriously, because that's what it means to be in a band. And I mean, just to draw a sort of cultural distinction, I think we live in a culture now where you don't see FU anymore. It's like fake FU. I don't want to offend you too much because you won't buy my record. So we're in an interesting position because we're coming back and people have a rosy opinion of what we did, but oftentimes it doesn't include the reality of what we did. it's one of those like last second entries on a record where pretty much all the songs are written and then you write it the last second. Then you're like, okay, what are we going to do? We don't have time for this. So we decided right away, let's record it right away, because if we don't record it right away, maybe we'll lose the opportunity. So originally it was like a Civil War dirge.
Right. What was the?
What was more like? But you were playing more like a. Right. Not really.
I want to live for God country.
I can't. It's a different key, but. So it was more like a Civil War dirge.
Yeah. And we actually, the Ken Burns soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I mean, I had it. You know, pipes and. Marching band. I thought like some sort of marching band theme. Something.
Like a martial sort of thing.
Yeah, right, there. Right. Like a funerary, you know, kind of, you know, there goes our country kind of thing. When we recorded, it was freaking dismal.
By the way, there's your quote for the show. It was freaking dismal, that song.
You know, you find yourself, there's something to be said for enthusiasm. And, you know, when we record, it's pretty much me on one side of the glass in the control room and him playing drums, and we like to sort of have visual contact. So we're playing it, and we're doing this. And I find myself kind of nodding off as we're playing it, like... I mean, the whole time I'm not losing faith in the song, I'm losing faith in my version of the song, or our version of the song. And I really respect our partnership in that, like, he'll come in and look at me, I'll look at him, and we're saying, this is not happening. There's not that, like... No, this is the way, and that's the way it's going to be, and we're really flexible. Actually, the kind of funny about this is I have this really cheesy keyboard. I don't want to say the brand, but it's got all these things, and it's like if you you can play the song, and it'll play it in a particular style. So you can say ragtime, and it'll just play it for you. It's like a wedding keyboard. So you can do waltzes. You don't have to do anything. You just have to hold the chords, and it'll do the doom da doom da doom. So we actually found the march... Like oom-pa-pa. Right. So it was like... And so we hooked up the keyboard and we ran it through this effect unit. And next thing you know, we were doing a disco version of the song. And so it was like, you know...
I want to live...
You know, brum, dum, 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 dum.
Was it 4 a.m. and you were all getting a little punchy
at this point? No, this is still reasonable hours. We keep bankers' hours of 11 to 12. Exactly. And... we built the version that's on the album around that. So if you actually hear the album, it sounds like some sort of weird combination of 70s disco and whatever it was originally. We're not sure of that version that's on the record. He didn't produce the track, Roy Thomas Baker, but he mixed it. He loved it. And he kept talking about how the disco bass from 1970 and how he was at Studio 54 and mounds of cocaine. And I kept thinking, how does this got to do with a song about our country? You know what I mean? It's like, so... That's one of those ones that's like, who knows, but it's there. It exists.
I want to live for God country. I want to give to God. It's too late for some. It's too late for what you've done. I can't help what I divided you. For God and country, I'll fight. For God and country, I'll die. For God and country, my soul is so alive. My soul is so alive. Lay down your arms to me. Lay down your arms for God and country. I wanna live when no one's watching my way home. I want to give.
Well, we could talk a little bit about the shuffle. You want to chime in on that?
We kind of toyed
so we'll
around.
Talk about your fear of the shuffle. Let's.
I personally have always been afraid of the shuffle.
Will you, will you demonstrate that?
Yeah, the shuffle is basically this groove.
Now that's that is commonly associated with Good Times.
Good Time Boogie.
Good Time Boogie. Right, just play a little bit. I should show you. It's like...
You can do some arena rock stuff, aren't you?
Right. So you can see how
painful
that is.
He doesn't want anything to do with the Good Time Boogie.
Good Time Boogie is not my thing. Billy's love affair with the Shuffle has gone on and on, while mine has kind of waned, as we said.
So I went to him and I said, we had this sort of these moments where I go to him and I go, okay, just like focus. You know, he's like, okay. And I go, the Shuffle. And he goes, no. That is the exchange. Like, we'll just be talking and I'll just stop him. The Shuffle. So this went on for about a week. I'm telling you, I got a feeling in my gut, the Shuffle. And he kept saying no. So this, the original riff is the same. So his first inclination was to play Good Time.
Right.
I like the riff because it's kind of Sabbath-y. But he hated the drum beat. I mean, it was just like, you got to be kidding me. And plus, it sounds more bluesy that way.
JC, don't play that.
Yeah. So Sabbath is a band that did the Shuffle very well, but if you do Sabbath Shuffle, you just sound like Sabbath. So there's nothing novel about that. So we started thinking, okay, who actually pulled the Shuffle off aesthetically? And that's when we turned to Floyd. And we started talking about early 70s Floyd, about how they used the Shuffle, but it doesn't sound like the Shuffle. So then maybe you want to sort of show them, we'll set up a template of ideas like, okay, fool around in this direction, and I'll keep playing. And he can sort of show you how he kind of evolved into the part. So. Right. But it might be 10 minutes where he's just looking for that click moment. So,
right, so we just kind of go back and forth until I start dialing it in, kind of like what he's doing with guitar parts. We're just looking for moments.
But show him, because this was a big point of contention, show him when you break out of the Shuffle and go to the snare, how we automatically lose steam.
And before you do that, just so I understand, when you're saying you're looking for the moment, are you trying a lot of different things, like in this 10-minute space, trying to find that one little one that works to expand off of
absolutely.
That to create the
then
rest
you
of
know
the
you, okay. Then you know you've got something that you can build around.
I understand.
So the idea is to create tension throughout the piece of music. And you'll notice, like, as soon as I come off the toms and go to the snare, it turns into something super conventional.
Right, so try it again. So. So we would play that, and we'd be so excited as long as he was doing the toms. But as soon as he would go to the snare beat, we were like...
Buzzkill.
We're back to awful.
Bottom dropped out.
Right, bottom drops out immediately. So you're talking like, you know, a week of like, how do we solve this problem? Because how can you just do that? You can't stay there because there's no dynamic. It doesn't go anywhere. You're basically relegating the song to having no dynamic, which is that if that's what we wanted to do, then that would be fine. But that we wanted the song to go upward. We felt it had an upside. That's when we came up with the whole idea of breaking out of it and going into more of a conventional Shuffle, but with a riff that feeds the Shuffle better, which is gets into the whole... And if you hear that on the album, it takes him 6 minutes to break out of that tom beat. But when he does, then there's a riff to back him up, and then it takes him.
Yeah. in my rooms. This hate bomb's a sequence of one by one. This rhythm's that easy. We suffrage the wine. There's clouds in my shower. Ghosts in my eyes. This silent march as triumph through alone. So let's jump. Does this will stand for much? But hearts untouched, the hearts
It is another time warp. It's now the next day once again. I'm on the home stretch, one block away from my house. I haven't been home in like a week since it was Christmas. Ian's roommates weren't home. We had the whole house to ourselves, so I just stayed at her place for quite a long time. So since I was talking about Mother real briefly in there, in that massive Billy Corgan stuff, let's finish off the show with a Mother song. So, like I mentioned, Deborah Jean, whatever, I don't remember her name, but one of the singing girls from Mother quit the band. And apparently this was kind of how the whole band started. The whole premise is they started off as just a three-piece, just the main guy, the songwriter, and his sister and this other girl. So there's the harmonizing and stuff was a big part of it. So to demonstrate how cool that was and how good they were at it, let's play. This song is called Body of Years from their new album. And I might play the album one, or I do have a dug up from somewhere them doing five or six songs live in a studio somewhere. And it's kind of cool just because it's like, you know, just them performing all live, all together. But not at a, like in a concert venue. So it's like better recording quality. So I'll probably play that version. And, yeah, it sounds really cool. No auto-tune for this band.
from the ages when parties.